few years ago, I was in the old Maritime Museum in Fat Market Tower in Tallinn before they did the revamp. All the exhibits were marked up in Estonian and Russian, unlike the newer half of the Tallinn Maritime Museum at the Seaplane Harbour, where the exhibits were marked in Estonian and English. So really, I was looking and not learning anything. Being a lazy museum and gallery visitor, I rarely learn anything anyway. There was a section of the museum given over to model ships, many of them dated from the Soviet era, and had been made by the same chap. Unusually, I thought, space had been given over to pay homage to this fellow. Part of this was a large cabinet, which was filled with neatly laid out tools. And in the middle of the cabinet, in English, the only English I remember seeing in the entire visit, was a small sign with the words, Implements of the Model Maker. Ah, thought the crime writer part of my brain, which is a very small part of my brain, to be honest. Sounds like a perfect title for the crime novel. And I squirreled it away and thought about the crime novel that would accompany this title. First off, I came up with a plan for a standalone with an inspector in the National Crime Agency called Elizabeth Bishop, travels to Massachusetts, where the British maker of model ships, Dr. Crispin Thebes, a peculiar, deaf, mute, lecturesque genius, is accused of a double murder. Then I was writing the Westfall series, and I pitched the same idea to Mulholland as the fourth Westfall book, but now set in the north of Scotland. Westfall obviously would replace Elizabeth Bishop, but Dr. Thebes remained the same. Mulholland didn't want to commit to a fourth Westfall, however, and so that idea never got written. I returned to Plan A. About 10 chapters in, I hit a wall. That's pretty early to hit a wall. Dr. Thebes being mute didn't help in the wall front. I think on screen it would be terrific, but in book form I was struggling to make it work. I abandoned it and wrote D.S. Hutton Book 5 in my time of dying instead. Then again I went back to Model Maker Plan A. The wall was still there. I thought of writing it as a movie script, but that wall proved to be just as high. Time was passing, as time does. I decided I should write another Hutton novel, and there was Dr. Thebes, and I thought I should put myself out of my misery and make the story part of the Hutton collection. That changed everything. It was no longer a standalone tale of a creepy, deaf, mute, lecturesque genius, the book fought over by publishers brandishing seven-figure deals and the keys to the castle. It was a regular Hutton novel, much like the others, and Dr. Thebes is no longer mute. There's not really much about making model ships, but that's probably a positive. And it's pretty funny, which is also good. Always better when crime novels are funny. Clear then that at no stage did it occur to me to use the model maker as some sort of metaphor. The model maker was always a maker of models. However, as readers will note, there's virtually nothing about his implements in the book bar passing references here and there. This is obviously because the implements part of the title is in the metaphor, and the true skills of Dr. Thebes do not lie in making models. At least, that's what future generations of literary scholars can infer. So here are a few short passages from Implements of the Model Maker, D.S. Hutton, Book 6, My Part in the Great Tragedy That Was 2021. Being a Hutton novel, it contains language some may consider offensive. Sergeant Harris and I having a quick bite to eat, sitting out on a bench in 5-degree weather in the precinct watching the world go by. Not that there's much of the world going by. It's still pretty quiet out here in the world. The afternoon has turned beautiful nevertheless, and while we're sitting out in, the air is crisp and cold, the sky a gorgeous pale blue. We both have a cup of warm soup and a cup of coffee to follow. Even so, some of us, on missions of the greatest import, do not have all day. So today's victim was a minister, right?
Yep.
Where was the church? Partakish. Not far from Byers Road, not sure if it's officially Partick at that point. I take a glug of soup. Chicken and vegetable, generic and basic, but tasty nevertheless. Can feel the warmth of it all the way down my throat. There's something about ministers and murder, isn't there? Says Eileen. You keep getting sucked in. I think the universe might be trying to tell you something. You get into the stage where 7 out of every 8 crimes you have to investigate are related to the Church of Scotland. You should set up your own specialist unit. Funny, this is what, like the 3rd in 20 years? Seems like more. You could have your own badge. You could be the maverick cop who all the rest of us view as suspicion, but who does amazing work fending off the evil that lies at the heart of Christianity. And wouldn't it be great if it turned out all the stories are linked and there's some nefarious mastermind behind it all, some quiet old minister preaching to 5 or 6 octogenarians in a wee kirk in Applecross or something, and it turns out he's Moriarty. We're staring at each other from a couple of feet apart on the bench. And you get to bring him down in an intense firefight, she adds with a smile. What did you eat for breakfast? Nicolas Cage. Where did that come from? I don't know. Sounds like the kind of shit film Nicolas Cage would make these days. Well, I think I'll skip eating Nicholas for breakfast, thank you very much. Anywho, tell me everything. I down the rest of the soup, take a napkin to my lips and then a sip of coffee. Minister, woman in her 40s, married, knows literally everyone. I mean, that's the trouble with ministers, they're connected to like everyone within 10 miles. But then there's the other side of the coin and such the way of these things. Our minister was a bit of a looker, so there's always the possibility someone, you know, had romantical interest. You are so shallow, she says through a mouthful of soup. What? It's not like it's just attractive people who have relationships, is it? Good point. I'll add that to my developmental database, try to factor it into the investigation. You the cheeky sod. Keep talking. Just at the outset here, there are no specific leads, husband aside, and the husband is only a lead in that he was her husband. They seemed, far as anyone could tell, to have been happily married. And the first victim, was she also attractive? I smile at that, take some more coffee. Mouth quickly adjusting, able to take a little more this time. Good coffee, by the way. Thanks. A round-oiled yachtswoman, Jennifer Talbot. Yes, attractive, and as an added bonus, she was pretty fit. I mean, like, physically fit. I don't recognise the name. No, it doesn't look like she made a thing out of sailing around the world. Didn't race, didn't write books about it or anything. Just something she did. What was she doing in Glasgow? Last time she sailed around the world was 3 years ago. Since then, she's been staying in a small boathouse in some guy's property down by Helensburgh. Some rich bloke she used to be married to, but who's now married to someone else. Well, that sounds like a story. It does. But the likes of me and the boss won't get anywhere near it. We got all the noise in the periphery, though there's not much periphery with this one. She was repairing her boat, one plank of wood at a time by the sounds of it, and was aiming to head back out in the waves at some point. Dead now? Exactly. Any detail about the last time the victims were seen alive, that kind of thing? The vicar had been doing the rounds, looked like she didn't really stop during lockdown, but had been doing more now that we're opening up a little, touring the neighbourhood, visiting her flock. Church has only just restarted, not many people attending. She was out most nights. Husband had no idea which congregational sheep she was seeing on any given evening. Same murder weapon? Too early to say. Don't results back from the second murder? Nope. And the first, it was what, they don't know exactly, but it was small, a small tool of some sort. A small tool. That's all they've got. She takes a long drink of soup, staying straight ahead. I give her a quick glance at her profile with blonde hair falling over her forehead from beneath a maroon knitted hat, the collar of her thick coat pulled up high. She looks like the gorgeous blonde one out of ABBA in some snowy video or other. I mean, I'm fucked if I know if ABBA ever made a video in the snow, but you'd think they did, right? I think I'm as caught up as I need to be, she says. So what's on your plate this afternoon? I'm speaking to some parishioners, average age 129. Lucky you. I mean, one of them is literally in a home and has dementia, and the people at the home are like, what are you thinking? We all had Eurydice telling us not to fuck this shit up, no stone unturned, so I'm out there booked in an hour from now to speak to old Margaret about the dead Reverend Wright, and I have another interview before that, a few more afterwards. I'm jealous. No, you're not. I mean, you always luck out, Tom. You get to be at the cutting edge of the biggest investigation of the year. How cool is that? I'm not at the cutting edge. Do you know where I am? And with the thought that comes into my head, another bleaker thought immediately follows, and I feel the arrival of the dark shadow. I take another drink of coffee and stare ahead at the crisp, cold day and try not to hold on to that. What just happened? It's cool. What just happened? She repeats, though she's trying to keep a little lightness in her voice. Tell me that I won't sleep with you again. That's funny. Can't help smiling. Eileen, crime fans, has never slept with me. And never will. I just thought I'm like Bond and Thunderball. Go on. The nuclear weapon's been stolen. Shit's hitting the fan. Everyone's in a mad panic and all the big, bald agents are being called in. Bond's one of the main guys, so he expects to get sent to Moscow or Vienna or some shit, but M is his hunch and sends him to the Bahamas, and Bond's like, you're kidding me, it's the biggest case in all the earth, and you're sending me on holiday. That's what this is like, except I'm not Bond, and I'm quite happy to be in the outskirts. Of course, he got to go and have sex on the beach while I get to go to a care home and interview Margaret. As an analogy, that's as shit as your Connery impersonation, she says, laughing. Why? Because M was right. The nuclear bombs were literally in the Bahamas. Suppose. A long drink of coffee, nod to myself, time to switch on and get going. So, what was that dark shadow? She asked. It wasn't just that you don't get to go to the Bahamas. Look around the precinct, disquiet as ever. The odd person here and there, a couple of women talking too loudly, a guy pushing a pram, a kid on a bike. The day's still cold and beautiful. Taylor always used to do the Bond references. Ah, well, my friend, there are plenty of positive things to think about DCI Taylor, if you have to think about them. But still, think about your case. You being you, we can be fairly confident you're going to end up on the wrong end of the nuclear weapons. I nod, take another moment, another look around, then a smile at her. We share the look and I'm on my way. Call me later if I'm gone when you get back, she shouts after me and I lift a hand in response. Thank you. What the fuck were you thinking exactly? That's funny. One tends to think of sentences that begin, what the fuck, particularly when delivered in a stressful Glasgow work situation, as being quite aggressive, angry, accusatory, that kind of thing. Despite this, as I stand in the middle of DCI Hamilton's office and she sits behind her desk in a white blouse, sleeves rolled up, looking like she's at the arse end of a long day at work, she looks curious rather than annoyed. That's reasonable, I say. Oh, thank you, Sergeant. So I'm 54 and still finding new women younger than me to take me to the cleaners. Exactly the career path my parents would have dreamed of for me when I was a young bastard running wild in the streets of Uddingston. I knew I shouldn't, I say. So I did. I get the look. The long, slow look of incredulity. I'm familiar with that look. You knew you shouldn't, so you did. Pretty much. Am I to respect your honesty? I won't tell you how to take it, it's just what happened. Jesus fucking Christ. That one should not as an exasperated Jesus fucking Christ. This one is pretty damn attractive, by the way. And yes, I know, I find all women in power attractive. Fuck off. So the bottom line is that we have a suspect who's having an affair with both victims, she says. No one said he was a suspect. The man was sleeping with two women, and the two women had been murdered. He's a suspect. Did you ask if he's sleeping with any other women? No. Did he tell you anything that he might not tell me when I go round to interview him now? He said the reason Jennifer Talbot hadn't gone back to sea was not related to the repair of her yacht. Said she was burned out. She had a few too many bad experiences and discovered fear along the way. That's not what anyone else says. If he's telling the truth, they were sleeping together. Perhaps she talked more to Dr. Thebes than she talked to anyone else. Dr. Thebes is a man, right? She says. Funny. For men, having sex and talking don't necessarily go hand in hand. My husband can't talk after sex because he's already got a mouthful of sandwich. I laugh. I mean, I think that was appropriate. She's pretty funny for the detective chief inspector. Anything else? Well, like I said, he's a model maker, so he has lots of small tools. Some of them look sharp and there's rigging and wire and the like. Okay, that's positive, she says, though her voice is dripping with sarcasm. So we have a suspect who not only was fucking both victims, but who literally works using implements that were potentially used in the murders. I nod. And you, what, left someone else in his presence, tied him up to make sure he couldn't go anywhere? He'll still be there. He'd better be. He's blunt. I didn't at all get the impression of guilt from him. He seems willing to talk about anything. However, I weigh the words. How do you describe the guy? I'm sure this'll be good. She gets up from behind her desk, goes to the coat hanger in the corner of the office, takes a jacket and throws it on. Well, I'm not sure how to put it. You'll understand when you meet him. He's something. He's something? Yeah. Huh. Insight much? Wait, she just said that? You're going there now, I ask, so that I don't curl up into a scrotal ball of discomfort at that abominable use of the English language. Yes, of course. Would you like me to join you? Jesus, you've got balls. No, Sergeant, I would not. Look, maybe I'm showing you some respect because you've obviously been in the force a long time. Maybe I'm just respecting my elders, but I'm pissed at you, Sergeant Hutton. I cannot have anyone on this investigation who decides to do their own thing, and certainly not someone who intentionally does the opposite to the right thing. You're done here. Go back to campus slang. I shall be expressing my unhappiness to your chief. I'll leave it to her to sort you out. We stand a yard or two apart in her office, a weird kind of a staring match. Tension in the air, yet neither of us have expressed any actual anger, other than her saying she's pissed like she's an American, though the tone was wrong. Okay, I say. See yourself out of the building, she says, and then she walks quickly from her office, leaving the door open behind her. Who was the first person to use the word much at the end of a sentence like that? A social media thing, maybe, given it's an abbreviation, rather than writing, well, President Trump, you incontinent piece of racist shit, I think you might be projecting there when you accuse the Democrats of being corrupt. They write, Donald Trump, projection much? Who did that? I mean, I know the person themselves isn't entirely to blame. If the first time it had been done, everyone had just ignored it, apart from maybe one or two people who did a quiet word, then we'd never have heard it again. Instead, weirdly, other people read it and thought, wow, what a great way to use the word much. And so this affected linguistic aberration was born. Nevertheless, that very first person needs to be found and punished. I'm not for violence generally, but they need to be flayed. They need some Game of Thrones level of shit inflicted upon them. With such trivial thoughts, do I later sit and eat dinner. Across the office, Chief Inspector Hawkins enters, walking quickly through, looking at her phone. She does not acknowledge anyone, does not look up from her screen. She's holding a Costa coffee in one hand, a bag hooped around her bent elbow. She looks like an American TV actress, not anyone in particular, but you know that American TV show look. Attractive, slim, great teeth. They all kind of look the same. Plastic. They don't mean she's had work done. That's a different kind of plastic. Just that special American TV kind of plastic beauty. She's in her 40s. Perhaps at some point made the decision to not get married, to not have a family, concentrate on a career. A career woman scaling the heights of Police Scotland. Perhaps the decision was made for her. Perhaps she can't have children. Perhaps she'd love to have children, but has never met the right partner. Perhaps all kinds of shit. Her heart was broken, never to recover. Manet, the Mr. Right of romantic fiction, died 6 months into their marriage. No, not that. She'd still be wearing the ring in memoriam. Perhaps he died before the wedding. Perhaps he left her for her best mate. Perhaps she's a lesbian and feels she can't come out, though seriously, why? Perhaps she's a lesbian, has come out, and I know nothing about her private life, because after all, I do know nothing about her private life. Coffee lifted from the desk to my lips, take a drink, tastes great, but the movement is automatic and I'm barely thinking about it. So drinking without even really noticing, cup back down at the desk, still holding it in my right hand, fingers warm in the cup, staring idly at the closed door of Hawkins' office. Tom? I turn. Heart does the thing. Yada, yada, yada. Inspector, I say. I wonder if anyone other than her realises that I'm a bumbling, lovesick moron in her presence. Do all the youngins in the office regard me with even more disdain than before? The Chief Inspector would like to speak to you. I insisted that I be present. Notice from the corner of my eye, Detective Constable Ritter looking over, wondering what I've done this time. Are you sure? She didn't say anything when she walked past. Carla stares at me, the familiar look to accompany my glib remark. Last slurp of coffee, place the cup back in the desk, get up, follow the inspector across the open plan. She's wearing jeans, smart and stylish, naturally, but jeans all the same. The round collar of a plain white t-shirt showing above the crew neck of a maroon cashmere jumper. Simple right enough, but Jesus, she's gorgeous. Head's not really in the game, is it? Snap of the fingers and we're in the chief's office. The door closed. We're not sitting down because we're not staying. I think I might have had enough of you, Sergeant, says Hawkins as an introduction. This obviously isn't to be a trial of any sort, with an explanation, examination of the facts and a reasoned decision arrived at. It's more like a Trump impeachment trial verdict already decided before kickoff. I'm going to take a leaf out of the book of my new nemesis, Dr. Thebes, and only answer actual questions, although now that my crush has inserted herself in the drama, I'm less likely to say something outrageously stupid in any case. New nemesis, fuck's sake. This seemed a relatively simple task. This, in fact, was really a task that ought to have been done by constables. But we have understood the reasoning from the centre, bring experience to the party, perhaps the vital clue was less likely to be missed. All you had to do was do your job. Do your job. Interview some people and report back. One would have thought that the worst that could happen was you missed something. And you know what, Sergeant Hutton? I'm not sure you would miss anything. You seem against all the odds to be a decent officer. When you function, that is. Then you do this. And I'm getting emails from this Eurydice woman, for goodness sake, telling me how to do my job, and I'm in the mind to tell her to... Well, frankly, she can fuck off, even if she does have a point. And then, at 5 to 7 this morning, I find myself just out the shower, standing naked in the middle of the bedroom, getting absolutely eviscerated by the Chief Constable of all fucking Scotland. Not on Zoom, I hope. Couldn't help it. We were all thinking it, right? Oh my fucking fuck, she says, and she looks helplessly at Callis for support. Callis has her face on, the same face she has on literally every single circumstance. Not really sure what Hawkins was expecting. Can you just... Shut up. Just shut up, Sergeant. Whatever any of us think, this Eurydice Hamilton is the current face of crime investigation in Glasgow. Probably the entire country. I, like you, have no idea whose dick she sucked in order to get there. And you know what? Maybe she didn't suck anyone's dick. Maybe she's just there because she's the best fucking detective in all fuckdom. She can do what she likes. And when she's pissed off about something, everyone gets to hear about it. She's pissed off at you and the Chief Constable got to hear about it. She takes a breath, sits back, lets out a long sigh, shakes her head as though clearing away all the malign thoughts of her defective detective sergeant. She stares at the desk for a moment or two, then she shrugs and returns to the fray. Jesus, she says. This is it. This, we're done. The Chief Constable deeply wanted me to suspend you, but he's aware of the optics of the day. Suspending an officer for interviewing a suspect won't look good. So, this is it. My instructions were to give you a bollocking. We hold the stare, one moment to the next, my face blank, I think, hers exasperated. How did I do? She says. I think she's joking. I almost say that she blew it by introducing the image of herself naked in the bedroom, but a man must know his time and place, and this isn't it. To be honest, that line definitely only stays in my head because Callas is in the room. Good use of the phrase, oh my fucking fuck, I say instead. I'll try to use it more often. Go, leave, I'm sure you have work to do. I nod respectfully in response, look at Callas, and then she turns with me and we head towards the door. A word, Kadri, says Hawkins, and so I'm back out into the open plan on my own, door closed behind me. Work awaits, regular, boring-ass work. It was, after all, what I was doing 2 days ago, and those last 2 days were also pretty boring anyway, well, apart from meeting the mysterious doctor and having fabulous illicit sex on the floor. Back to my desk, sit down, hand goes straight to the coffee, take a drink, make something of a face, set the cup back down on the desk. Everything all right? Asks Ritter. Coffee's too cold, I say. My spider sense tells me to look across at her rather than at the computer. She's given me the well-practiced, seriously look of the youth. You didn't mean the coffee then? Everything all right? Yeah, it's fine. In a shock turn of events yesterday, I went off-piste, upsetting DCI Eurydice. Oh, everyone is upset. Apart from me, as it turns out. So I'm off the exciting double murder case and back to this. I indicate the computer. DC Ritter, apprised of all the facts, has nothing else to say. We don't really do conversation, but we don't do conversation in a completely different way from the way in which Callas and I don't do conversation. And with a mutual nod, we get back to work.